And that's what you see when you're in space. About 40 minutes after launch, the rocket flies 8 minutes, and we'll see that later. 8 minutes from standing there to up in weightlessness, and then you open the payload bay doors, and then you can take a look out of the window to the backside of the shuttle, and you see that beautiful view. Most important, of course, in the beginning, you're checking out the orbiter everywhere around, everything looks good. You go through that tunnel, 8 meters long, into SpaceLab, 5 meters in diameter, 7 meters, 650 long, with all the experiments in there, and part of the experiments are outside. We'll see more about that. I want to show you here other aspects of being an astronaut that is in space after a couple of days. We are already used to it. I talked yesterday about it. It's quite an effort to become used to micro-G. There's no up, there's no down. The consequence of it is there's no left and right. It depends just in which orientation you are there. And I think that picture says it all. You see, I even show my hands, hey, I'm not cheating, I'm just free-floating there. And another thing you see, all of us, I think we have a pretty bright smile. Believe me, in the first day, you don't get pictures like that. Second day, maybe. Fifth day, definitely. The first part of the mission goes well, you have the first feedback, it's successful, everybody likes your work, no major mistakes happen. Mistakes always happen. The question is, how do you deal with it? Leave them behind in your brain. You have to take them in account what you do, but don't let them bother you anymore. Done is done. It's the past. Only the future from now on matters. And the next aspect I want to show here, the picture in the middle, this is a bunch of people, maybe half of here, this auditorium, 20 people, 25 people, maybe even 30 people. This is a training team who trained us to do the experiments. And there are many hundred people having trained us on the system, on the shuttle side, and the system of SpaceLab. Spaceflight today and at these times is not an effort of one person or of only the astronauts. Behind these astronauts, there are hundreds of trainers. Astronauts only can fly into space when they have a good vehicle. The vehicle is engineered, is built, is maintained, is turned around after the last flight to fly again by thousands of people. KSC, Kennedy Space Flight Center in Florida, 15,000 people were in work and bred just to turn the shuttle around. Just to turn it around, not building it, not repairing it, only turning it around. That includes very minor repairs. 15,000 people. That you have to keep in mind when we talk about cost of human spaceflight or spaceflight at all. You know, these are the costs where you spend the money for the people, qualifying these people, for developing instruments, developing vehicles. And it's definitely not the salary of the astronaut. And in 2006, 8 years after I was starting my training in JFC in Houston, I was assigned to that beautiful mission, a European mission on the space shuttle, bringing up the European Science Module Space Lab, Columbus. Pretty much similar to Space Lab, 6 meters and 50 centimeters long, 5 meters in diameter, or 450 in diameter, and then a lot of experimental racks, and you build up as a science module. Also some capability for external payload, and I show you here not a picture, not a photograph, but drawn picture, a diagram, because you can explain much easier and see right away what kind of module that is. And the purpose of that is, again, science, doing experiments in space. I don't want to elaborate any further because I think those pictures you will see, will they speak for themselves later. The crew being selected in 2006, finally flying in 2008 after we had launch delay shortly before Christmas in 2007. We finally were delayed into 2008. There are two Europeans here, Leo. He was the crew member who was brought up to station and was supposed to stay there for 3 months and work as a long duration crew member, and myself just doing the installation work with the other American crew. Two Navy pilots being now NASA employees, but these are the guys flying the shuttle. One Air Force flight engineer, being the MS-2, that means the one who leads or does the choreography of the cockpit with these two pilots. Then my dear friend Leland Melvin, who is nowadays, 3 days after our mission, the associate administrator of NASA for education. And Dr. Stanley Love, an American astronomer. A great guy. I think he would be talking to you very, very nicely. He's really very knowledgeable, and he can give lectures just like you. I don't know who's better, but as entertaining, he's a great guy. And that is the launch of the shuttle. I think you have all seen that. Rex Wallheim has been here in Montreal last week, I heard. I don't know if anyone of you heard it. If you haven't seen a shuttle launch or on TV, we will see one in just a little bit. If you want to know details, you have to read about it. The only thing I want to pass on to you, that this machine on TV looks pretty slim. It happens quite often, and you think, well, a big deal, or at least the American audience think, oh, what a big deal, another shuttle launch. You know, this is basically here the brown, huge tank for liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen, quite a mixture. Then the solid rocket boosters here, I call them always the white pencils, and then the shuttle itself. So the white pencil, these tiny little boosters, do you know how big they are? The diameter is about 5 meters. That would be, I guess, roughly that distance from the wall to here. That's the diameter of these boosters. And you can imagine how big that tank looks and how big it is. And the first time you see this thing standing on its tail and you get there and there is already there is already other fuel in there for the attitude thrusters, then you realize, hey, this is not so much a piece of metal with some tiles at it. This is just like a beast which breathes and lives. It's really like that. More than 20,000 tiles they have, and you can look at each of these tiles and see the number of flights that individual tile has gone through, because you impregnate it every time to make it resistant against fluid being absorbed, water being absorbed. I think enough of that, what I told you. Another perspective of a launch is here, one of these military planes. The other military plane takes that photo, and we are just about 20 seconds in the air. And it's not that the quality of that picture isn't good, but it shows you what's behind it and how the USA tries to protect, and how you have to deal with the airspace, with the water space, with the land space around a launch. And by the way, another detail, I didn't think about it, nobody told me, I overheard it. Just a week before launch, all of a sudden, there was on my schedule, meeting these people from American Air Force. And I didn't know what these kind of people are. Well, what happens if this shuttle gets out of control? Well, it drops into the ocean. What happens if it gets out of control by just losing its inertial system and it goes instead of into the ocean in eastward direction, going west. What is in west of Kennedy Space Flight Center? Orlando, a big city. Is Orlando as big as Melbourne? I bet it is. Several million, 2.5 or so, or 3 million. And so these people from the Air Force, they are the people who have the knob just to end the flight of the shuttle just on pushing a knob. And you realize that all of a sudden, and then you're very glad that these people are looking responsible, and you know that two of these nice people have to push each their own button in order to make it really happen. Yeah. I think you have to ask your better half to buy them a drink. Anyway, this is now in orbit. I have shown you a similar picture, but this time the Earth is above us. Well, how does that happen? Well, it doesn't matter. As I told you before, there's no up and down. This is only your head telling the Earth is above. Yes. And that's because we have the G vector here deciding what is up and down. In space, it's just a matter of a split second, and you think, oh, I am lying not on my back watching the Earth above me, I am lying on my stomach and the Earth is below me, or it's beside me. It doesn't matter, it's the same. And what you also see here in the foreground, this is the docking system, which has the job to damp out the relative velocity of the 120-ton shuttle and the 400-ton station. And you see the robotic arm 60 meters long, with a lot of cameras at the end and a gripper to do work and do transport in space. Enough of that as well. Where are we going? We are going to the International Space Station. At that point in time, this is the living module. Again, roughly 5 meter in diameter, or 450 in the inner side. That is the pressurized part where people live. You see here the airlock where astronauts can get out. You see here another docking port. You see a space vehicle docked here, another space vehicle docked here. In that projection, you don't really see that very nicely. You see the solar panels generating the electricity, the radiators getting rid of the heat, another robotic arm which can walk on station, can be put on a cart here on this rail system and can go from this position to that position and operate from there.